long after her second visit to Rosings, when Elizabeth was alone in the sitting room writing to Jane, she was extremely surprised to hear the front doorbell ring. And a moment later, Mr. Darcy, and Mr. Darcy only, walked in. His manner was strangely uneasy. And when, a few moments later, Charlotte joined them, he sat a short while, conversing only fitfully, then, getting up again, made his excuses, and left.
Well, well. What in the world can be the meaning of that, I wonder?
I'm sure I cannot answer. He's certainly the strangest of men.
You know, Eliza, I do believe he must be in love with you.
Mr. Darcy? Oh, my dear good Charlotte.
William, what brings you out like this?
Oh, I've been making a tour of the park, and I was about to end it with a call at the vicarage. Are you going much further?
Oh, no, I was about to turn back myself.
Then may we walk back together?
Of course.
Thank you. I was in the act of nerving myself for the melancholy task of saying goodbye to you all.
So you're leaving us?
Yes, on Saturday, I'm afraid. Unless Darcy puts it off yet again, I'm at his disposal. He arranges these things as it suits him.
I see. And if he can't please himself in the matter, at least he has the pleasure and the power of choice. I don't know anybody who seems more to enjoy the power of doing what he likes than Mr. Darcy.
He likes to have his own way, I suppose. But then, so do the rest of us. Only he has better means of getting it, because he's rich. A younger son, you know, becomes used to self-denial and dependence.
Oh, I should have thought the younger son of an earl could know very little of either, Colonel Fitzwilliam. Come now, when have you ever really been prevented from doing what you wish by lack of money? Now, be honest.
I see you're in one of your sharp moods, Miss Bennet. You're right, to some extent, I suppose. But there is one point you've overlooked. Younger sons may not marry where they like, alas.
Unless they happen to like women of fortune, which by a strange chance it seems they often do.
Not all, Miss Bennet.
No? Then I must take your word for it, sir.
But I suppose that in general our habit of living does make us a little dependent. There aren't many in my situation who can afford to marry without at least some attention to money.
Then that is a misfortune I am fear you will have to bear, Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Perhaps. But it is not one that need deter Darcy.
But then, Mr. Darcy, I am sure, is not the marrying kind.
Oh? What makes you say that?
Perhaps he has no need of feminine companionship. After all, he has a devoted sister who I am sure is a very charming girl.
You haven't met her?
No, but I've heard her very highly spoken of by Caroline Bingley and her brother.
Ah, Bingley. There's a pleasant, gentlemanlike fellow for you.
I agree with you.
But not always over-prudent, I'm afraid.
In what way do you mean?
Darcy's uncommonly fond of him.
But in what way is he imprudent, Colonel Fitzwilliam?
Well, from something Darcy told me on the journey, I think Bingley has good reason to feel indebted to him.
Oh, really?
By all accounts, he recently saved him from some less than wise attachment or other. He didn't give me the full circumstances or mention the lady's name, of course.
And did he give you the reason for this interference?
I understand there were some very strong objections. To the family, at least. He didn't say exactly of what kind, but one can imagine.
Yes, indeed one can.
You look very thoughtful, Miss Bennet. What's the matter?
Oh, I was merely thinking of what you just told me, Colonel Fitzwilliam. Why should Mr. Darcy feel himself competent to judge such matters, I wonder?
You think he took too much upon himself, is that it?
I certainly don't see on what authority he should decide the happiness of poor Mr. Bingley, or for that matter of the lady in question.
You seem to feel strongly on the subject, Miss Bennet.
Oh, I was simply speaking in general terms, of course. But since we know nothing of the actual circumstances, I suppose it is not fair to condemn him. Oh, well, here we are, Colonel Fitzwilliam. I'm sure Charlotte will be very pleased to see you, but if you will forgive me, I will go up to my room.
Later that day, a message was received stating that the presence of the party from the vicarage would be expected at Rosings that evening after dinner to say their farewells to the visitors.
I think perhaps we should really be starting, my love. In this weather, we should allow ourselves a little time for removing our outer garments when we get there. I hope Miss Elizabeth's not going to be so inconsiderate as to make us late.
Elizabeth is not coming tonight.
Not coming? Not going to Rosings? But how is that? How can that be?
She feels unwell.
Unwell? She intends to reject the generosity and favour of a personal invitation from Lady Catherine herself merely because she happens to feel unwell. And what in the world are we supposed to say on her behalf to Lady Catherine, if you please?
Merely what I have just told you. She begs to be excused because she has a headache.
A headache?
When they were gone, Elizabeth sat alone, and as though to anger herself as much as possible against Mr. Darcy, set herself to reread all the letters that Jane had written since her departure for London. While she was still so engaged, she was surprised by the sound of the doorbell, and her spirits were a little flustered by the thought that it might be Colonel Fitzwilliam, who'd once before called at this hour in the evening and might have done so again to inquire particularly after her. But her discomposure was considerable when at length the door opened.
Miss Bennet, forgive me calling on you in this way, but I had to know. Are you at all recovered?
I am tolerably well, thank you, Mr. Darcy.
I'm so glad to hear it. Very glad.
You should not have troubled yourself on my account, Mr. Darcy. It was not at all necessary.
I could not help it. I could not stay.
Your aunt will surely think it very strange behavior on your part.
I cannot help it if she does. I've struggled in vain. I cannot remain silent any longer. Miss Bennet, you must allow me to tell you how greatly I admire and love you.
Mr. Darcy.
You seem surprised that I should make such a declaration?
I am not just surprised. I am speechless.
I am fully aware of the fact that my manner may have seemed cold and indifferent on our first meeting, but you must admit that the circumstances at the time made that to some extent excusable. However, since meeting you once again, here, in different circumstances, I have come to realize my mistake, at least as far as your own nature and character is concerned. In fact, each subsequent meeting has only served to increase my very sincere regard and admiration for you. May I hope that this feeling is returned and that I may be rewarded by your acceptance of my hand?
Mr. Darcy, I simply do not know what to say.
If you wish for a moment to compose yourself...
No, it is not that. Mr. Darcy, I know it is customary on these occasions to express gratitude for the honour bestowed and so on, and if I felt any, I would thank you. But I do not. There... That is the plain truth of it.
You do not?
No, I do not.
I see. You are certainly very explicit.
I am sorry to cause you or anybody else pain, Mr. Darcy, but it is better that it should be sharp and therefore of a short duration.
You are most considerate, madam.
And besides, the circumstances which you tell me have prevented your regard for me up to this moment should make it easy for you to accept my refusal now.
And is this all the reply which I am to have the honour of expecting?
Yes, sir, it is.
Might I inquire why, with so little attempt at ordinary civility, I should be rejected in this way? But it's of small importance.
And might I inquire why, with such obvious intentions of insulting me, you choose to tell me that you liked me against your will?
I said no such
thing. Yes, sir, you did. Against your will, your reason, and your character.
Oh, really?
Well, if those were not your exact words, that was your meaning. So, have I not good excuse for being uncivil, if indeed I was?
You deliberately choose to misunderstand
me. Wait. I have other reasons for feeling as I do. You know I have. But even if I had felt differently about you myself, do you think anything could tempt me to accept the man who admits to being the cause of ruining my dearest, most beloved sister's happiness, possibly for the rest of her life? Well, sir, can you deny it?
I have no intentions of denying that I did everything in my power to separate my friend from your sister, or that I believed myself justified.
Thank you, sir. Thank you at least for your honesty.
So, that is why you are behaving in this manner. I might have guessed.
Yes, sir, you might. And it would have saved a great deal of trouble if you had.
In that case,
madam... One moment. It is not only because of my poor sister that I feel as I do. Please do not comfort yourself with that thought, sir.
It's little comfort, I can assure you.
My opinion of you was formed long before that. Your character was unfolded to me all too clearly by Mr. Wickham.
Wickham?
Yes, sir, Mr. Wickham. I see you do not care to be reminded of that name.
You seem to take an eager interest in that gentleman's concerns, I notice.
Yes, sir. Perhaps I do. Knowing his particular misfortunes, it would be hard not to.
His misfortunes? His misfortunes have certainly been great indeed.
They have, and of your creation.
You really believe that?
You resented his good relations with your father. You prevented his advancement and condemned him to a life far beneath his deserts. In fact, you stood in his way at every point. And yet you can treat the mention of his misfortunes with apparent contempt and ridicule.
So, you really think me capable of all that, do you?
Well, sir, deny it if you can. Go on and deny it.
Thank you for explaining yourself so fully. My faults in your eyes must be very heavy indeed.
Deny it, then. Deny it.
I hardly think I need, madam. But I suspect that even this might have been overlooked if your pride had not been hurt by my perfectly honest confession of the scruples I felt when first meeting you.
Mr. Darcy, if you do not wish me to lose my temper, finally...
Wait, madam. It is now I who must beg you to allow me to speak. Thank you. I was about to say that all these accusations might never have been made if I had flattered you by concealing my original scruples and pretending to an unqualified admiration from the very first. But deceit of that sort is not in my nature, nor am I in the least ashamed of the feelings I had. I consider they were quite natural.
Do you? Do you indeed?
But could you expect me to rejoice in our different circumstances? Come now, Miss Bennet, be honest.
Mr. Darcy, you are quite mistaken if you think the manner of your proposal just now affected me in any way, except in sparing me the concern I might have felt in refusing you had you behaved in a more gentlemanlike manner.
Madam?
Yes, Mr. Darcy, you may well be surprised. From the very first moment of our meeting, your manners impressed me by their arrogance, conceit, and selfish lack of concern for the feelings of others.
Thank you, madam. You have said quite enough.
And by the time I had known you a month, I was convinced that you were the last man in the whole world I could ever be prevailed upon to marry. There, sir. Now you know my exact feelings on the subject.
I shall not, of course, inflict my company upon you any longer.
Please do not, sir.
Goodbye. And forgive me for having wasted so much of your time.
Odious creature. Pompous, horrible man.
Miss Elizabeth, I'm glad you've come down at last. I have the pleasure of handing you this letter.
For me, Mr. Collins? I was not expecting one.
Were you not, cousin? Well, the gentleman in question paid us the honor of delivering it by hand. Did he not, my love? And he must have taken the trouble to walk all the way from Rosings right up to our own humble door to do so.
Did you say from Rosings, Mr. Collins?
I did. And I need hardly disclose to you the identity of the bearer, I think. There. Is that not an elegant hand? Is that not the hand of a cultured man? You can see it at a glance.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Oh, and Lady Catherine was gracious enough to remark on your absence last night, cousin.
Mr. Collins, Elizabeth wishes to read her letter.
I was fortunately able to explain the exact nature of your indisposition to her ladyship.
Mr. Collins,
and she was kind enough to express the opinion that the malady was brought on by an excess of outdoor walking, which her ladyship doesn't consider a suitable activity for females of delicate birth and constitution.
Mr. Collins.
What is the matter, my love?
Can you not see that Elizabeth wishes to be private?
I'm sure Cousin Elizabeth is quite aware of the fact that she's perfectly free to read her letter in my presence. I'm not one to stand on ceremony in a matter of this sort. I should not object. You may read it, of course, cousin. You have my full authority to do so.
It is all right, Charlotte. I will read it later in my room.
You know how long, madam, on receiving this letter. It does not contain a renewal of that offer which was last night so disgusting to you. That episode, for the happiness of both, cannot be too soon forgotten. However, there are some points on which justice demands that I should defend myself. Two particular offences you last night laid to my charge. The first was that I had detached Mr. Bingley from your sister, and the other that I had, in defiance of honour and humanity, ruined the prospects of Mr. Wickham. Of the first, I need only say that I have already to some extent pleaded guilty. I would only add that though I soon came to realize that Bingley's heart was strongly engaged by your sister, her sanguine temperament and serene countenance led me, wrongly I now think, to suppose her own sentiments were not so deeply stirred. If by my action in persuading Bingley to leave Hertfordshire I have caused her pain, and I now believe I have, then I owe her my apologies, though I cannot blame myself for acting in what appeared to me at the time good faith. No, there is only one part of the affair that I look back on with some distress, and that is the fact that I concealed from my friend the knowledge that your sister was in London. To that I must plead guilty. I knew it, and so did Miss Bingley. Her brother is ignorant of it to this day.
And perhaps he... Oh, Jane, dearest, dearest Jane.
But the other, weightier accusation concerning Mr. Wickham I can only refute by exposing to you the full truth, however unpalatable such a course may be to myself. On my father's death, he applied to me for the living which he said had been promised him. But I, being of an age with him, and knowing his true character and the dissipations he habitually indulged in, felt that to recommend him for a life in the church would be nothing short of mockery. My judgment was borne out. When largely, I suspect, to revenge himself upon me, he insinuated himself into the company of my sister, Georgiana, then a girl of 15, and actually prevailed upon her to run away with him.
No.
Fortunately, through her own innocent disclosures, I was just in time to prevent it. If I had not been, I leave you to imagine for yourself the appalling consequences to this poor child, for a child she still was, I can assure you.
Oh, poor girl. Poor, poor creature.
So, madam, I hope you will now acquit me of injustice to Mr. Wickham. I don't know in what manner of falsehood he has tried to impose upon you, but that he succeeded in doing so is abundantly clear. Only my desire that you should know the full truth obliges me to write to you at all at such a moment. I will only add, goodbye, madam, and may God bless you.
With what a variety of feelings Elizabeth read and reread this letter, it may easily be imagined.
I, who have always prided myself on my good judgment, who have often laughed at my sister for her simple candor and the ease with which she can be imposed upon. If I had been blinded by love, there might be some excuse for it. But vanity, not love, has been my undoing. Oh, the humiliation of it. Until this moment, I never even knew myself.
The two gentlemen left Rosings later the same morning, and in doing so did not escape a parting salutation from Mr. Collins.
I chanced to be in the lane beyond the coach house and was obliged to step quickly aside as they drove by. It was altogether most fortunate, as it would have been very ill-mannered not to have shown my gratitude and respect for the civility Mr. Darcy has shown us in calling here so often, would it not, my love?
Yes,
he must have been aware of me, I feel sure, as the coachman was obliged to swerve aside and actually called out something in passing, which unfortunately I didn't catch. But I afterwards called in upon Lady Catherine, as I knew she'd be feeling the loss of her visitors, as I indeed do myself. And the upshot is, now that she's alone once more, she has been kind enough to require our presence at Rosings this evening. Though not until after dinner, of course. Is that not gratifying, my love?
Yes.
I feel greatly honoured that she should turn to us for comfort at such a moment. I consider it a mark of true breeding that she should ignore the ordinary social conventions by her command.
But, Mr. Collins, this is Elizabeth's last evening with us, don't forget.
Oh, please don't concern yourself on my account, Charlotte. I shall be quite happy here. I have much to do before the journey.
But Lady Catherine was most particular in hoping that Miss Elizabeth would be well enough to join us this time, which in the circumstances I thought most magnanimous of her. So I hastened on your behalf, cousin, to thank her heartily and assure her that you were quite recovered.
I feel it exceedingly, Mrs. Collins. Exceedingly I feel it.
I believe nobody feels the loss of agreeable company as much as I do.
Yes.
I'm quite sure of it, Your Ladyship.
But I am particularly fond of those two young men, and of course know them to be so of me.
Oh, undoubtedly so, undoubtedly.
The dear Colonel rallied his spirits a little as he was going, but poor Darcy, well, I have never seen him so dejected.
Is that so? Poor fellow.
I'm not surprised, of course, because all visitors feel the same upon leaving Rosings. Miss Bennet, you seem out of spirits yourself this evening, I notice.
I'm sorry, Lady Catherine.
You should write to your mother and explain that you must stay a little longer. Mrs. Collins would be quite glad of your company, I dare say.
Oh, I've tried my hardest to persuade her, Lady Catherine.
I am much obliged for your kind invitation, Your Ladyship, but I am afraid I am wanted at home.
But you have not been here above 3 weeks. You cannot get to know Rosings properly in 3 weeks. Darcy always maintains that it cannot possibly be done in under a month, at least.
Nevertheless, I have to go, I'm afraid.
And besides, if you had waited a little longer, I might have been able to take you as far as London myself. Dawson doesn't object to a passenger on the barouche box if they do not speak or distract his attention.
Thank you, Your Ladyship.
I'm sure Miss Elizabeth is sensible of the great honor of such an invitation, Your Ladyship. Are you not, cousin?
I have just said so, cousin.
Then you should send a servant to accompany her, Mrs. Collins.
Oh, yes, Lady Catherine. Only I'm afraid...
In my opinion, young women should never travel by public transport unattended. It is most improper.
No, Lady Catherine.
You are most kind, Lady Catherine, but my uncle is sending his man from London. He will look after me, thank you.
Oh, so you have an uncle who keeps a manservant, have you? Mm-hmm. That was not made sufficiently clear to me, I am afraid.
I'm extremely sorry for the omission.
You must invite Miss Bennet down another time, Mrs. Collins.
Of course, Lady Catherine. She's always more than welcome.
Only I shall wish to be consulted in good time on another occasion, mind. It was somewhat unfortunate that her visit coincided with my nephew Darcy's. He is extremely fond of Rosings, naturally, and always most particular that his time here shall not be wasted in tiresome social activities. It's all right, thank you, Richards. There's no need to make up the fire. We shall not be here much longer.
Ah, Miss Elizabeth, down already. I trust you slept well.
Excellently, thank you, Mr. Collins.
Miss Elizabeth, while we are thus on our own, as it were, may I take this opportunity of saying that I hope you found our simple way of life at Hunsford not too unpleasant, eh?
Indeed, I found it very agreeable, thank you, Mr. Collins.
And it gives me no little pleasure to feel that Mrs. Collins and I have been the means of introducing you to a type of society that it might not have been your good fortune to meet otherwise, I think.
You have been most kind, sir.
And now you may carry a favourable account of us to Harford, may you not, cousin? At least I flatter myself so.
Of course I shall.
Lady Catherine's marked civility to myself and my dear wife, you must have observed for yourself. Yes, Miss Elizabeth? It only remains for me to wish you from the heart an equal felicity in marriage one day.
Thank you, sir.
And if I may say so, I see no particular reason why it might not be so at some time in the future. No reason at all.
You flatter me, sir.
Not just yet, of course. But still, time enough, no doubt. It isn't every man who puts a high value on youth and innocence. Fortunately.
Her thanks to Charlotte were sincere enough, and is genuinely received. And when she was safely in the carriage, she leant out of the window for the final parting, while many thoughts and memories of these last eventful days passed through her mind.
Goodbye, Lizzie. Goodbye.
Well, cousin, you visited Rosings 3 times. How much you will have to tell at home, hey?
Yes, shall I not? Goodbye. Goodbye.
And how much I shall have to conceal.